Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Donna Sebo, and this is a holiday for all of us in the United States. We're celebrating Memorial Day, and we'll be sharing a special story with you later on in the hour. But today we're going to start off about animals. We're going to be talking with a lady, Melanie Cornez, and we're going to be talking about Westminster, yes, that wonderful dog show that we all love so very, very much. I don't know if you're as much of a dog fan as I am, but she's got experience with that, but this is also her personal story about how dogs have influenced her life in a very special way. Melanie, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. I'm happy to be here.
Now, your book is titled In the Shadow of Mercury, a memoir of midlife and dogs, and you have this photograph of this very majestic black dog on the cover of your book, and I know that this dog had a tremendous influence on you, but how in the world did you ever get involved with show dogs? That's a world unto itself. Most of us, we acquire our pets, we love them, but when we watch a show like Westminster or the Eukanuba special, and you know, there's some others that have come along, but I didn't have a clue about how many shows are done around the world for show dogs. How did you happen to stumble into it?
Well, Donna, I have to tell you, I actually stumbled into it. When I got Mercury, who is the dog on the cover of my book, I had no idea about dog shows, nor did I have any intention of showing him. And he was the cutest little puppy. He's a Schipperke. And for people who might not know what a Schipperke is, they look like little black foxes. And here they have no tails. In Europe, they make you grow out the tails. But anyway, I had some friends who were into showing otter hounds, which are these big, big, curly-haired dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they suggested to me that I take Mercury to a match. And I said, a match? I had no idea what a match was. And basically, a match is like a dress rehearsal for a real dog show. So I took him there to a match, a local one, and the judges were saying, oh, you know, he's so cute, he's this and that, you should take him to our point show. Now, a point show is an official American Kennel Club sanctioned show where a dog earns points toward its championship. So I decided to do that, and that's how I first stepped into it.
Now, tell us a little bit about the history of the Schipperke, because this is a dog that is not, they're cute, but what's their average size?
They weigh about 15 pounds. They live anywhere from 13 to 17 years. Their temperament is kind of independent. Some people say stubborn, but they can be trained. They go back to the Middle Ages. There was a dog that was the ancestor of the Schipperke called the Luvenar. He lived in, these dogs were farm dogs, and they lived in the province of Louvain in what's now Belgium, but in those days the borders kept shifting. And it was a herding dog, and from that dog evolved the Schipperke that we know today. And in Europe, they still show the Schipperke in the herding groups, whereas here in American Kennel Club shows, they are in the non-sporting group, which means dogs that used to have a purpose that no longer are used for that purpose. They kind of put them all in this group.
Now, with you and you're getting involved with dog shows, and of course your book is filled with a lot of your own personal journey in life and how this wonderful character Mercury just had changed your whole life for you. But when you are looking to do something like this, now every breed has particular points that are looked for. With the Skipper Key, and he's just adorable, these dogs are just precious. What is it that when you take them into a show, what are the steps that you have to go through? Let's do that first. If you're going to show a dog, or you're interested in doing that, because this has become such a significant part of your life,
yes,
what is it do you need to be aware of, if whether it's a Skipper Key or a Scottish Terrier or, you know, a bulldog or a beagle, whatever it may be, whatever you just love in the way of, or a Chihuahua. If you're going to do this, what do you have to know about first?
Well, okay, first of all, you get your, you know, if you're going to show a dog, you normally go to a breeder. And the breeder, if they are an ethical breeder and really don't want you to be mating this dog indiscriminately, they will insist on co-owning the dog with you. So if you want to show a dog, you usually have to co-own with the breeder. And the breeder then will guide you to, you know, the shows that they want to enter, because most of these people have been in dogs for quite a while. And, you know, I was a newcomer, and my breeder actually was not into showing, but she told me that he must be shown. So I was able to buy Mercury outright. I didn't have to co-own him. So she said, you know, that I had to show him, and that Riverhead, the dog show that came after the match, was the one where I went to try to get points on him. Now, every dog that the American Kennel Club recognizes has a written standard, and that's like a blueprint for what the dog should look like. So, number one, you have to familiarize yourself with the standard, and, you know, you have to see and hope that your dog measures up in most ways. I mean, no dog is perfect. The standard is, you know, mm-hmm, a blueprint of perfection, and no dog is going to be perfect. Then you look on the AKC website, and you see what dog shows might be coming up in your area, and then you follow the directions and send in your entry. Now, you know, dogs, they have different categories. Like if you're just starting out with a young dog, a puppy, they have 6 to 9 month puppies, and they compete against other puppies of that breed in that age group. And then they have 9 to 12, and, you know, then it's what they call open dogs. There's one 12 to 18, and then there's open dogs, which is any age. And so you go and you buy a show lead, these narrow little skinny leads, and you practice. And then, as in my case, when I went to that first show, you learn that you're not doing it right.
So, join the group, yes.
I tried real hard. I even went to some classes, but this woman took me aside, and she said, you know what? You should put a handler on that dog. And a handler is a person that gets paid to show dogs, and they mm-hmm know exactly what to do. And so I realized that I should probably hire somebody to do this for me, and that's what I did.
Now, if anybody listening, and I know many of my listeners will have watched these dog shows, and they will often comment on certain handlers and how skilled they are. They will work maybe with different breeds. Maybe they won't. Maybe they've got a particular group they like to work with. But you bring out in your book, as you are expressing your own personal story of growth as you're going through this process, you bring out how there are doggy motels, which I just cracked up when I saw that term. And then you talk about how you dress when you're showing the dog, because you don't want to take away from the dog. The dog is the star, not
that's
the
right
person that's walking around the ring. And whether it's a male or female, they dress, if the dog is of a very dark coat like Mercury is, then you want something that's going to attract the eye to the dog, like maybe a neutral tone of some kind that is going to let that dog be seen. And when you, I've noticed this before, but it's really quite a performance that has to be done. And the animal is, what do you do if the animal just doesn't like doing shows?
Well, then you don't exactly have a show dog, do you? Then you, you know, some dogs really are up for it, and you can see the best of mm-hmm. them when you look at Yukonuba or Westminster. I mean, these are dogs with attitude. They have flair. They love what they do. You know, if you do get a dog that doesn't like it, you can try to get him interested, because you are allowed to give them food along the way. It's not like in obedience trials where, you know, you can't keep throwing food in their mouth. So, you know, you give them the food and see if they'll rise to the occasion.
I want to ask you a question. This is something I've always wanted to ask. I see people putting stuff in their mouth, and once I heard someone comment, this is liver, and I thought, oh, yuck, you had to keep liver in your mouth through the show. What did you put in your mouth to make, or the handler put in the mouth, to make Mercury perform well? I mean, what could you keep in your mouth that wouldn't become distorted? I mean, obviously your saliva mixes with that. I'm sorry if I'm grossing some people out. But I mean, with the animals, this is important. You do this because you want, you'll see them with the food, and it keeps the dog's attention. It's like, oh, yum, I got that treat coming. What in the world do you guys put in your mouth?
Well, it is liver, but it's baked in the oven to such a point that it's so dried out. You know, the dogs love it, but when you put it in your mouth, you don't, you know, it doesn't disintegrate in your mouth. Kind of like M&Ms, you know. Oh no, M&Ms melt in your mouth, not in your hand. These
Yeah, that's
melt.
A yum. That's not good for dogs.
Yeah, no, you can't. No chocolate for dogs. So they bite off a little piece of liver, they stick it in their mouths and kind of just hold it there. And, you know, some of these show dogs, after a while, they get used to seeing the handler just, you know, bring their hand up to their mouth. And so that alone will excite them, because they'll figure the liver is there. And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But it's so dried out that, you know, it doesn't really, I mean, you taste a little of it, but it's not.
Not very much.
Yeah.
Now,
and you don't want to don't want to put like freeze dried liver that comes already prepared, because that kind of sticks to the skin inside your mouth.
Oh yuck.
Oh
yeah. Well. So here you are. Mercury has been the beginning of a cycle for you, and you found a handler. And how many awards did Mercury win?
Well, Mercury had to, all the dogs need to have 15 points to become champions. And the point system is set up, and this was a while back when I did it, and I'm not good with numbers, but you have to have three sets of major points. And these can be two-point major, a three-point major, or a five-point major, which is, you know, quite a coup. And in order to get these points awarded, now, in Skipper Keys, where I was showing in the Northeast, there wasn't much competition, and the number of points awarded depended on how many dogs were entered in that breed. So most of the shows that I took him to, you know, there were only like a two-point major at stake. So that's when I sent him out with the handler, so she could take him further afield to get more competition and get his majors right away, and she did a great job. I mean, he finished, and except that she did make a mistake. She was 1 point short. I thought I had a champion, and I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, regrettably, Mercury sustained an injury later on, and he passed away. But you were absolutely in love with the Skipper Keys. You just said, this is my dog. You just loved everything about them. And, of course, you really enjoyed, you found that you really had a knack for doing the involvement with the show dogs. And you ended up with another dog, and it was Monkey? And
Monkey.
What a name.
Yeah.
Why did you name the dog Monkey?
I had decided when Mercury passed away that my next Schipperke was going to be called Monkey, whether it was a male or a female, because these dogs are such quirky little critters. I mean, they have such funny personality traits, like the one I have now will just lie on her back and hold a toy in her mouth, and you could see her looking out of the corner of her eye to see if I'm watching so that I'll come and scratch her belly. And So I just, they kind of reminded me of, you know, the antics that a monkey might do in the zoo, and so I picked the name Monkey, but actually her registered name, and she was born on Mother's Day, and she was out of Mercury's mother. The breeder had bred Mercury's mother one last time, and so I named her. The kennel name was Kibril, and so her name was Kibril's Mother's Day Miracle, but her call name was Monkey.
Well, you ended up with, what, two? You had Argo and you had Monkey?
Yeah, because unfortunately for me, Mercury did end up being a champion, but it was too late to get into Westminster. So I figured my next Schipperke, I was going to get to Westminster no matter what, just, you know, in honor of him. So I thought Monkey, the breeder sold me Monkey as a show quality dog. And unfortunately, Monkey, her teeth did not line up. And Schipperke bite, and when the judge looks at these dogs at a dog show, they look at everything. They want to see if the teeth are correct for the standard for that breed. They, you know, look at the feet. They look at everything. So Monkey had what we call bulldog mouth. Her lower teeth jutted out, which she was undershot. And so, you know, people joked. They said, oh, get doggy braces. But, you know, I wouldn't do that. I mean, the point is you're supposed to show at a dog show potential breeding stock. And, you know, I would never, well, I didn't want to breed anyway. But, I mean, why show a dog that's not correct? So I trained Monkey in obedience, and I put an agility title on her also. But I still wanted that show dog. I needed to get to Westminster for Mercury. And so the breeder had one more dog the next year, and that was Argo. And I went up to look at him. She had had him for 7 months. She was keeping him to see how he might develop. And to me, he just looked like a skinny old thing. I thought, gee, you know, this can't possibly be a show dog. But I said, okay, you know, give it one last shot because I really have to get to Westminster for Mercury. And so I bought him, and I named him Kibril's Mercurial Argonaut, the Mercurial after Mercury, and Argonaut because his quest was not the Golden Fleece, but it was to get to Westminster.
Well, you've got so many fun statements about your dogs, and of course you go into all of the background activities at Westminster. You talk about all of the tremendous energy with these dogs, and once in a while the cameras will go into the back scenes where they will show the groomers grooming, and you have all of these different breeds and all of the activity, and the public is even let in, are they not?
Yes. You know, the public is actually encouraged to, Westminster is a benched show, and that means the dogs have to be in their crates in their designated spot on the bench from 11 in the morning till 8 at night, so the public can come and talk to the breeders and learn about the breeds. They can go in the back and watch these dogs being groomed. And like Schipperke is an easy breed to groom. Nobody really, you know, you just spray them with water and fluff them up. But to watch a poodle being groomed is really phenomenal. I mean, the blow dryers going and, you know, the combs, and it takes about 3 hours to get a poodle's coat the way that they want it to look to go into the ring. I mean, it just every detail has to be perfect. And the only time that someone would not want to talk to the public would be right when they're getting ready to go into the ring, because then, you know, they're kind of nervous and the dog might be nervous. So that's not the time to approach anyone. But other than that, the public is definitely encouraged to ask questions and come and look at the dogs.
You have quite a bit of good information in your book about how you were told don't put your animals through obedience training if you want them to be a show dog. And I thought, gee, that sounds a little strange because they need to respond to you and the trainer, but there are certain things you want in your show dogs. You want them to be animated. You want them to have their persona. If they enjoy being out in the ring, you want them to show it and do their prancing and to show their spirit. And that often, dependent on the breed, is what they want to see in a dog. And that really presents an interesting challenge. How do you train obedience yet not have that undermine the appearance and the enthusiasm and the vitality of that animal?
Well, the formal obedience, and this is why I said don't obedience training. I mean in the way, you know, the actual obedience where you're going for a title, because there they have exercises where the handler would be walking with the dog in heel position, which is right next to you, and you don't really want that for a show dog. You want them, you know, animated and moving freely at your side or even out in front. Some of the larger breeds look like they're dragging their handlers around the ring. And in obedience, also, when the handler stops, the dog is supposed to sit. Now, you don't want your show dog sitting in the ring. I mean, you want that dog on all fours and, you know, going around and catching the judge's eye and hopefully getting an award.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, you know, you do, in order to get them to listen to you, you have the good old liver bait or any other kind of, you know, food that you want to use for training them.
So this is really, if you love your dogs, you really have to have a passion for the showing, because it is labor intensive. And in your case, you had a handler. Now, someone, I noticed every once in a while they'll talk about young people that start doing handling at a very early age, some as early as 6 or 7, and they're right there with their parents and they're interactive with the animals. If someone had a youngster who's listening to the show that just loved working with dogs, and that youngster wanted to know more about doing shows, things like this, is there an organization that people can go to learn how to be a good handler?
Well, I think a lot of the juniors come up through dog families. The parents are already into dogs, and so they mentor the child, and they, you know, show them what to do, and they have the kid help getting the dog ready for the show. And then you have the American Kennel Club has a classification called junior handling. And these are for youngsters, I think the cutoff age is 18. These are for youngsters that want to be handlers or, you know, at least spend their 10 years doing this. And they, when they're judged, they are judged on their handling. The dog is not being judged, and that's what's interesting. They, and, you know, they learn from other people. I don't really know that there's, you know, a set school for junior handlers. I think you just, you know, you learn through your parents, through your friends, if you're interested in doing that.
Now, how many dogs do you have at this time? Each of your dogs, the Schipperkes that you've had, you tell their story, and some of it's extremely emotional and moving. Some of your dogs have passed away. Certain incidents have occurred. You had the situation with 9/11. How many Schipperkes do you have today?
I have two, and one mixed breed. And the two that I have, one is a retired show dog, and I've actually shown her in, well, I had someone show her for me in a veterans class, because she's 12 years old, so she's a veteran. I have another Schipperke named Mozart, who probably came from a puppy mill, because if you saw the two of them side by side, you would see the big, you know, the difference. Marlena is definitely to the standard, and poor little Mozart, he has spindly legs, but he's very sweet. And my mixed breed, we think, is like a mix of a pit and a lab and maybe a greyhound. She's a mix of a mix. It's not like, you know, one dog got together with mm-hmm. another and produced her. So three mm-hmm. dogs and a New York City apartment, but it works out.
Well, I know people in New York. They love their dogs. And
oh, yeah.
I've seen them out there when I've been in New York. They're walking them at midnight. Of course, my passion is Scottish Terriers, and my husband is totally to blame for that. We have enjoyed Scotties for many, many years and wouldn't trade them for anybody else. We love all dogs. But for those of you who are listening who are animal lovers, Melanie's book, Cornez, her dog is Marlena.
Yeah.
And of course, Mozart, and they're mentioned in the book. But she dedicated this book, titled In the Shadow of Mercury. It's a memoir of midlife and dogs and her story about how she got involved with them, how her life brought her into the exciting, extremely involved life of showing dogs and being a part of the annual event, Westminster, which is just simply electric. So it's a fascinating read, and I think that it would be much enjoyed. Now, Melanie, what is your website? Do you have a website regarding your dog and your book?
Yes, people can go to shadowofmercury.com.
Shadowofmercury.com.
Mm-hmm.
And is this also on Amazon?
Yes, it is.
Great. Well, what would you want to leave my audience with in the way of thoughts regarding their dogs? I know if they're animal lovers, their dogs are part of their family. But if someone really wanted to invest the time, the money, the effort in being a part of this unique environment of showing dogs and being in competitions and eventually ending up at Westminster in New York, which is always done at Madison Square Garden, what would you say to them?
I would say to go to local dog shows and familiarize yourself with, you know, what's going on, talk to people, decide what breed you want, and then go for it.
And deciding what breed you want is really important. What is one of the best resources that people can use? Because every breed, we were talking with some friends yesterday, every breed has particular personality types, and you really do need to do that. Is there one resource that you'd recommend?
Well, I think the American Kennel Club website does a terrific job of explaining, you know, or presenting the different breeds, and that's akc.org. And, you know, they are a marvelous source of information because, you know, they really want people to be educated about dogs and to make sure they get a breed that fits their lifestyle and, you know, their personality. And so I would advise people first to check that out.
I agree. I've seen people that don't even like to take a walk around the block, and they get, the, you know, one of these big dogs that has all of this energy. They're hunting dogs, and they expect them to sit down and be quiet most of the time. It doesn't work that way.
No.
They are very unique. They each have their own special talents and gifts just like people do, and so matching yourself with the right animal is important. So you can go to akc.org. Melanie Cornetz, her last name is spelled C-O-R-O-N-E-T-Z. Her book is In the Shadow of Mercury. And you can go to her website, shadowofmercury.com. Melanie, thank you so very much for being my guest today. I hope you have a marvelous Memorial Day evening. I know that it's East Coast time where you are, and I'm out here on the West Coast. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Okay, thank you, Donna. Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break on this holiday, this Memorial Day. When we come back, we've got more good things to share with you, so don't go away. Again, Melanie Cornez, In the Shadow of Mercury, Skipper Keys. Fascinating reading, shadowofmercury.com is the website. And also check out if you're wanting to find more information about dogs, or maybe breeding them, or perhaps even showing them, go to akc.org, and you'll find a lot of resources and information available to you. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sivo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Wherever you are, I hope you are having a fabulous holiday. I know we have been on the road. We had 16 hours of traveling, actually more than that, over these last 3 days, and it has just been glorious here in the Pacific Northwest. So wherever you are, I hope that you are enjoying to the best of your capacity this marvelous holiday weekend that we are experiencing. Now, if you'd like to call in and chat with me today, telephone lines are open. There's one number now, only one, that you have to call into, and that's worldwide. If you'd like to chat with me and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the number, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I always enjoy knowing what part of the country you are calling in from. And on this Memorial Day, again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow evening, I do want to remind you I'm going to be on Katie's show, Spiritual Hollywood. They've invited me to be their guest. And that's going to be from 6 to 7 right here on BBS Radio Station 1. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of things, and telephone lines will be open in that show tomorrow evening. So, again, 6 to 7 tomorrow evening with Katie of Spiritual Hollywood. And I'm really looking forward to participating in that. So if you have a chance, tune in and tell your friends. Also, I have a quote here from an 86-year-old Blake Edwards. He's an Academy Award-winning writer, director, and producer, and he was a big-time lover of making comedies for everyone. He said, "I enjoy laughter, and I really truly feel that if there were some way to distill it, that you could go to your local pharmacy and ask for 16 ounces of pure pratfall, I'd probably make it to 110. I think it's the best medicine in the world." And laughter is the best medicine in the world. Norman Cousins proved that when he was battling with cancer and put himself away with the advice and involvement with a physician that helped him with a nutritional program. But also he said, "I am going to laugh. And he found that laughter enabled his body to heal, and by taking himself out of the stressful environment he was in, he was able to beat the enemy that had attacked him physically as he perceived it, and was able then to go on and write about his experience, influencing the lives of so many of us in a very, very special way, showing how mind and emotion has a tremendous effect on how we feel in everyday life. So I want to thank Blake Edwards for that quote. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Gnostic Mystery. Now, this is a novel, but it is filled with so much fact that the fiction perspective of it sort of just wraps around the facts like saran wrap, and it engages you in a very, very interesting way, and I think it is something that is going to make for a fascinating interview tomorrow. And also, we're going to be talking about diabetes and how, if you or a loved one or a dear friend are having a problem, if you're having a problem with this, well, we might have some tips that we'll be able to share with you. Hope Warshaw is going to be my guest. And then Camille Bishop is going to be with us on Thursday. This is going to be about business. If you're in the business world and you're finding that you're having to deal with Generation X, Y, the boomers, and you go, how can we make the communication among these generations more effective so that we can work together as a team? Because every generation has its particular gifts, talents, and abilities to contribute. Well, Camille Bishop will be able to share a little bit of that inside track. And also, Dr. David Dahlman is going to be my guest on Friday. Why don't doctors know this? A doctor wrote this book. Why don't doctors know this? We'll find out. And David is going to give us the inside track on that. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Again, 888-815-9756. This being Memorial Day, I thought I would take some time to share with you a little bit of a personal story about a man who had been a guest on my show. His name is Michael Pickus, and he is a Yale graduate, and he's done a lot of writing about veterans, and especially World War II veterans, because his dad was a veteran, and he had some very special memories. And I thought that I would share this with you because it was in the early 90s that this man, Michael, found that his dad wasn't going to be around very much longer. In fact, 3 weeks before he died, he said, I had a talk with my dad, and it was during the month of December, and my dad was in a hospital room in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and he said this was where he had lived his entire life, excepting when he was in the Army. And he said, my dad would share stories with me about what he had gone through in the war, and I never got tired of listening to his stories. And when he was getting older, I tried to spend as much time as I could, and during the last 3 weeks of his life, I was able to spend even more time with him. And he said he really was wanting me to remember the things that he had to share. And he said some of the old stories were just amazing. And he said one of my favorites was about my dad when he was billeted in the home of an elderly French doctor. And he's my dad and this French host argued over the need for American bombing of targets in France during the Nazi occupation. And he said then they were enjoying a lot of vino and just really had a good time. And they would sing the French national anthem and also the American national anthem. And he said, my dad, the last time I saw him, one of the last times I saw him, he was sitting on his bed in his pajamas, he said, in his red flannel bathrobe, and he said something he had never before said to me, nor, I'm sure, to anyone else. He said, my mom had to go, and he said, I was there because she needed some help. He said, I want you to know that the war was the high point in my life. And he said it didn't really register with him. Michael didn't give too much thought to it. He said my dad was really sick, and a week after I'd been with him, he was dying. We knew it. But his words I never forgot. And it was many months later that the words came back to me. And he said, I really sat down and I started thinking about what my dad said. He said, my dad had been to war nearly a half century ago. He had never fired his weapon in anger. He had been a very successful man in business, had four children, married to the same woman, my mom, for 49 years. However, he said, why would he say that the war was the high point of his life? Well, the more he thought about it, little points of awareness came to him. He said, my dad went off to war when he was a very young man. This was a young man who, in his time frame, had hardly traveled away from home at all. Most people didn't go more than 25 miles away from home. He said he was one of millions around the world that had become engaged in the fight for freedom. And compared to what he was involved with, he said, how could the rest of his life, being an average worker, day after day, putting bread on the table for his growing family, measure up from sailing off to save the world to living the average life of an American? He said, I was always very proud of my dad, but he said, it took my dad's comment that it made me begin to appreciate the extent to which the lives of the men who had served at that time, who were now elderly, how they had become defined by the experiences of their youth, the experiences of war. And he said, it was only then when I began to understand why men would stand at traffic intersections to collect money for the veterans and why they would march in the Memorial Day parades. And he said, only after his death did I begin to imagine what must have been going through his mind at those parades and why, when the flag passed, my dad always took off his hat and placed it over his heart. And Michael had done quite a bit of research regarding the veterans of the Second World War and also those of Vietnam. And he said, combat deeply unites those who have taken part in it and deeply divides them from everyone else. It's a world most of us don't ever see. But once you have been engaged in it, it puts you into a league of your own that rarely can another person on the outside understand. Why? How can you know what a soldier has gone through unless you've walked that very same path or something similar? And there was a medic, Sandy Walmsley, that Michael quoted, who had been a combat medic in Vietnam. He said, you've got to remember that the purpose of an army in wartime will never change. It's to kill other people. You can do statistics, you can do logistics, you can market it any way you want. But the bottom line is to destroy other human lives. That's what an army is all about, and that's what a soldier is trained to do or give support to. He said, you can watch it on television, see it in the movies. You can do all kinds of things. But he said, when you really get down to the basics, it's very simple. Two people from two different political agendas, each trying to kill the other before the other kills him. And when I went through this and I was interviewing Michael and I was talking to him about it, he said, you know, Donna, we need to remember as citizens the freedom that we have enjoyed. It took those brave men and women from around the world to stand tall and true so that we could have what we have today. And Michael made a statement in his book that I really would like to share with you. He said, if we shirk our duties as citizens, if we avert our eyes from what we know is going on and what our soldiers have to deal with, if they survive whatever they've gone through, they live with for the rest of their lives. Bernard Malamuth said, without heroes, we are all plain people, and we don't know how far we can go. There are so many men and women who are heroes. They'll never be written up in a newspaper. They go overseas like our soldiers right now are going overseas and fighting for freedom, as they would like other people to know. But they're putting their lives on the line. Memorial Day isn't about just barbecues and having fun times to get together with families. It really should be honored and respected. I was down in Oregon this past weekend, and I was taken by a particular area in Oregon that they had put up 1,000 American flags. They were all in positioning, honoring the veterans of the wars that have been served. Now, that number is extremely small, I know. But it's quite special to see all of the effort and planning that had gone into that, because they said, yes, we have a celebration here, but we also don't want to forget that freedom is not not at all. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break, and not taking a break. We're going to be talking with someone in just a moment, but we do have to take a break. I'm looking at the clock, and we have to take a break. Caller, stay on the line, and I'll be right with you. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. We're going to be taking our first caller today. Hi, welcome to the show, caller. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
It's Michelle, and I'm in Norwood, Colorado.
Hi, Michelle, and
hi.
I hope you're having a wonderful holiday.
I am.
Good. Michelle, the first thing that I am looking at with you is the word education, and I'm getting in mind it's going to be ongoing, which shouldn't be a surprise to you. You love to learn. And I'm seeing you sort of at a crossroad right now, but it's not a negative crossroad. It's just, if I'm going to take advantage of opportunities, what do I choose? Is there one that's better than another? And I would say no. What I'd like for you to do in making your evaluation regarding choices, I would like for you to ask yourself the question, what is my bigger picture? What is it that I would like to see as an outcome? Or if I were to leave a legacy, what is the bigger picture? How would I like to see things evolve? And allow your imagination to sort of take you down that path so that you can expand your perspective. Because in one level of observation, I feel like you're thinking too small. I think you're trying to compare yourself with other people without respecting and appreciating your skills and abilities to the level you should. And I would say, let's say you always had a knack for coordinating activities, that you had worked with the Girl Scouts or whatever, and you were always able to be the problem solver and coordinate things. Well, maybe you'd make a great planner for banquets, for doing political rallies, or working with major women's groups or men's groups to coordinate things. And again, I'm just using that as an example. So instead of maybe just going for just doing things on a smaller level, you'd say, well, let me see. I'll go and take this class on catering, and I'll go and I'll get involved in this, and I'll maybe take some management classes, but or read. You know, just acquire whatever you can. I think that you are a woman of many talents. You want to look at that which means the most to you and which you find just such an absolute pleasure to do. And if you will focus with that perspective, I don't think you'll be at your crossroad for a longer than maybe 2 months max, and I think you'll be able to make your choices very, very readily. Also, I would just want to say, be prepared. You've got some changes that are evolving in personal relationships, And it may mean that you will not be spending as much time perhaps with certain friends or people as you had in the past because you don't have as much in common with each other as you did before. And that may make you feel a little sad, but don't be sad, dear. Your world is expanding. It's growing. And you're developing a momentum that I think is just phenomenal. Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, I do have a question about we've made some changes since we had a child, and I'm curious about our financial situation, maybe some advice in that regard.
Well, I would encourage you not to sweat bullets over it. Now, I know there are going to be moments when you do, but I want you to look at it a little differently. I want you to look at the fact that you're going through these changes and that you do have certain financial responsibility. You have a husband who is happy to discuss things with you, and believe it or not, he relies on your judgment a great deal. He's very busy, involved with certain things, and he likes to be able to turn to you and have conversations about money. And the more you become educated about money, the more comfortable he is with it because he likes talking about it and looking at some things. But I would like for you, instead of being so concerned about it, ask yourself, do you want to go back into a working environment that's going to allow you, even though you've got a family, to do what you would like to do so you keep your skills up in the way and manner you want to do it? And you could do it part-time. How would you want to do it? Do you want to go back to school? If so, what do you want to put your energy to? I know you're at this crossroad, but as I said to you earlier, it's not a bad place to be. And the more you can educate yourself about money, the more you find out what your comfort zones are with money, the more fun you really can have with it. I don't think that you are going to be in a bad space with money at all. I really don't think so. But I think it is that educational process that you need to go through.
Okay. Well, it's been about 10 years since I've talked to you, so I really appreciate your time, and I just looked you up online.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, 10 years. So you met me 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, at least 10 years. Actually, maybe more like 15 in Seattle.
Oh, my heavens.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm so glad you took the time to look me up. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
yeah,
I appreciate it.
And tell your friends about the show.
Okay, I will.
All right, my dear. Have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. You're very, very welcome. This is Donna Sebo. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Randy DeVia about the Gnostic mystery. And as I've said so many times, I typically review nonfiction material. And when you go through 400 to 600 publications, and that doesn't include magazines and newspapers and all kinds of stuff that come across my desk, I don't spend a lot of time with novels. This one grabbed my attention because it is loaded with so much historical fact. And as I said a moment ago, it's wrapped with fiction like saran wrap. So it gets into all the little nooks and crannies, but you still have the substance that is there. Donna Sebo here. Hey, I don't think I'm going to have time to chat with you, but write this number down so you can have it handy because I am on 5 days a week, and you can always call in during the latter half hour, 888-815-9756. Right now, we don't have the time, but 888-815-9756 is worldwide. No matter where you are in the world, no matter where, you can call in, and I'll chat with you. Also, I've had people ask if I'm doing private appointments. I certainly do, but they are by appointment only. So if you want to get in touch with me, give me a call at my number, 800-872-8858. That's my 800 number. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are on this fabulous holiday, take care going home, count your blessings, and more than anything else, take a quiet moment and salute those men and women who put their lives on the line so that we can enjoy the freedoms that we have. They not only deserve our respect, they deserve our remembrance as well as this holiday is supposed to do. Donna Sebo here. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio, Station 1. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.